So last week, we had fun together. I felt that we had fun together and a lot of interesting conversation about words. Words, semantics, meaning, and how words can get in our way from really hearing. And the words that I find to be particularly provocative, we just touched on last week. I had a list of people go, oh, that's a lot of words. And I thought, oh, no problem. Well, we got to 3 words last week. And the words that we got to were religion, spiritual, and God.
You got through those 3 words?
It was challenging in some ways, because those words can be real reactive for us. Depending on how we were raised, those words are very provocative. And they can get in the way for us, for being able to really touch on the significance of those words. She's back. So tonight I'd like to look at the word. Oh, we also talked a little bit, I think, about Buddhists. We'll touch on that again. Faith, love, and Dharma. I'd like to look at those tonight. But before I do, I really want to start by reading this poem that is not really related to this, but I mentioned this last week when we were talking about the unrest in Burma. And it also does relate to these words and how we hear and block out, how our views and opinions of things block us out of our hearts of compassion. And this is a poem I mentioned by Thich Nhat Hanh. And it's called, it doesn't have a name here, it's Call Me By My True Names. Do not say that I'll depart tomorrow, because even today I still arrive. Look deeply. I arrive in every second to be a bud on a spring branch, to be a tiny bird with wings still fragile, learning to sing in my new nest, to be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower, to be a jewel hiding itself in a stone. I still arrive. In order to laugh and to cry, in order to fear and to hope. The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that are alive. I am a mayfly metamorphosing in the surface of the river, and I am a bird which, when spring comes, arrives in time to eat the mayfly. I am the frog swimming happily in the clear water of a pond. And I'm also the grass snake who, approaching in silence, feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks, and I am the arms merchant selling deadly weapons to Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl, refugee on a small boat, who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo, with plenty of power in my hand. And I am the man who has to pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom in all walks of life. My pain is like a river of tears so full it fills up the four oceans. Please call me by my true names, so I can hear all my cries and my laughs at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. Please call me by my true names, so I can wake up, and so the door of my heart can be left open, the door of compassion. Today, it's about the time I was hearing the bird sing. I was looking through this magazine. It's called Insight Newsletter. It's the magazine for Insight Meditation Society and the Forest Refuge and Barry Center for Buddhist Studies. And there's an article here by Joseph Goldstein called The Spacious Heart, Preparing for Compassionate Action, which is really what you did when you walked and you took BART, when you went last Friday. And it's what we did for many of us who sat in community on Saturday, either here or with a Kalyana Mitta group who also was sitting together. Sitting is an action. And in this article, I found out that Joseph's just written a book that's coming out, or has come out, I didn't know about it, called A Heart Full of Peace. And in it, he quotes Thich Nhat Hanh. Compassion contains a strong motivation to act. The Vietnamese monk Thich Nhat Hanh expressed this so well in saying, compassion is a verb. I think that poem it's all about compassion. It's just all about compassion. It's seeing all sides, not just the views and opinions of the way things are supposed to be, according to me. We know this, right? The world according to me, according to my views and opinions. And a lot of times the world doesn't conform to our views and opinions. So how can we get clear? How can we wake up enough to see beyond views and opinions? I think it's what practice is all about. I can remember during just about the time we were either bombing Afghanistan or Iraq the first time, talking to somebody who said that he had talked to Guy Armstrong, one of the teachers at Spirit Rock, and he said that some of the people in the Sangha were feeling ostracized for their views and opinions that they felt were right, that they were in favor of bombing and stopping the spread of terrorism. And though it wasn't most people's understanding of what should be done, people were feeling harmed. And people are so tender. You know, we're so tender-hearted and And people are just like, you know, us, whoever me is here, who feel things deeply. And so I'm looking at these words again, really from that place of what blocks me from having an open mind, having an open heart. What blocks? how are these words so triggering that I can't listen? I think I mentioned a story last week about a Native American story about wolves, one wolf was anger and one wolf that was love and compassion, and which one will win? And the story goes, it's the one we feed. And I was in a group where somebody said, that's not the answer that I would come up with. It was, in fact, the answer surprised me. And she said, I would say, how can we reconcile? How can we listen to each other? I thought that was very beautiful. I'm thinking about the, what were they called? The reconciliation in South Africa? What was that word? Truth and reconciliation. So that perspective was so much broader than which one do I feed? It's like, how can we even sit in the same room with the fear of that angry wolf, you know, or that wolf not like me? And so I get to practice again next week, going to Washington, D.C. I leave a week from tonight to go to another national POW MIA meeting and be with all the branches of the service, because my father was missing in action, and the military pays for us to go to hear what's being done about finding out what happened, which is, you know, now 55 years later. And I get to walk into that room, and who knows what will happen this time, but my experience so far has been walking in and seeing people in dressed in all the military uniforms and really feeling conflicted. You know, it's like, this would have been my life. This was my father's life. He was a career Air Force pilot. They welcomed me as a daughter. I mean, they do. I wear a name tag with my father's name. And it's like something that's very odd. And there's so much about what goes on at these meetings that I don't like. You know, it's very unpleasant. A few years ago, sitting with Paul Wolfowitz, who was talking to the group, was highly charging for both my sister and I, and I'm having to kind of like hold my sister back. And seeing some of the customs of the military, where they have a one table with an empty chair and a plate, and it's a custom. So the missing person, you set a place at the table, and you know, watching the heart, mind, you know, open and shut, open and close, open and close, open and close. And being appreciative of what they're trying to do, not to help people. So, words. Love. In the day, on Saturday, I said something about the Brahma Viharas, a little something. But I'll mention it again now, that the Brahma Viharas are really, in my way of seeing them, the four faces of love. They're love. Their love, which is the bottom line of everything. So what is love? What is love? What is love? Shall I start with Webster? Webster's dictionary definition. Love is a deep and tender feeling of affection for or attachment or devotion to a person or people. What do you think about that? What do you think about that?
It's limited.
Any word stand out for you in this definition?
Attachment?
Yes, attachment. Well, here's a way that language can get in the way. When I look up this definition, a few years ago, right after that, I went to a party for a friend who's a psychotherapist. And it was the 10-year anniversary of her becoming a psychotherapist, and she was having people come to celebrate with her. And she was also very much wanting to be in a relationship and wasn't. So she asked each of us there to talk about love. And I said, well, Webster says, you know, feeling of affection or attachment or devotion to a person or people. And I said, and that's the definition of dukkha. And of suffering. And, you know, I didn't think anything of it because that's the way I saw it. That was my view and opinion. That's from the teachings, when we look at attachment, clinging to is a definite, is the second level of truth, the cause of suffering. By the time I got home, I already had a phone call from my friend who was very upset, who really wanted to process this, that she thought I had disrespected her, that intentionally, because she's a therapist, who really works with people on attachment, on creating strong bonds of attachment when there haven't been strong bonds of attachment in childhood. Semantics. She was very offended, and really thought I had tried to diss her. It's just a word. How about connection? Now, what if that word was connection? I've found this word attachment to be quite provocative to people, especially people who are in the fields of psychology, because attachment's very important. The kind of attachment they're talking about is called bonding between parents and babies. Some of us here got really good bonding, and some of us here had trauma in our life. I can tell you right now, it was very traumatic. Yeah.
Just from preschool studies, but attachment was sort of the new best theory, I think, and that's, you sort of hit on something that was the latest vogue in psychotherapy.
Yeah. It is.
You know, next year, 10 years from now. Maybe connection, I don't know.
Yeah, but it's interesting.
I think that's part of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know it's part of it. It's attachment therapy, and my friend is practicing that, creating bonds. So,
the words are being used differently.
Right.
It's not just one meaning per word. That can cause problems if you think that a word has a single meaning.
Mm-hmm. So what is the cause of suffering?
Well, on this brief tape I listened to by Stephen Maline, he says, if you want to be that obsessive, don't get attached. But attachment or grief is the consequence of love. Mm-hmm. That's what he said one day.
Yeah. And it's, We're all going to feel that. That's, I think, one reason why we come here. Everyone, every single person we know and love is going to die, including ourselves. That's, you know, a big deal. I guess we could live our life without getting connected, I'll use the word connected, connected with people to try to ward off grief. But I think that brings its own grief, its own grief of disconnection. So what is love? Yeah.
Well, I think the prophet, and I was quite young, and these words just left off the page, but to know great joy, you need to know great sadness. And there's the as high as you go is low as you need to go. And if you're just on a plane, you're not really living. Mm-hmm. And I've always loved that explanation for for compassion, perhaps.
So what's love? And Tina Turner. What's love got to do with it? What's love got to do with it? To you, what is love? What is it?
Somehow open-heartedness. I can't put it into words exactly, but when I feel that feeling, there isn't a no that pops up about helping or reaching out or giving, or, you know, it's just open. And sometimes it feels like it's broken up in me because that's such a strong feeling of connection.
I would echo that and say it's total selflessness. All that you want for yourself, you want for all beings. And very, very, when I conceptualize it as love, it's that feeling in its fullest sense. It's not taking, and not attaching, but being selflessly open and part of everything.
What were the three Greek types of love? I don't know
what to say. Three
Greek types of love.
I
just don't remember.
Romantic love.
Agape.
I think parental love. Agape.
What were you going to say, Elizabeth?
I was just thinking that, being a little audacious here, I think the Buddha would define love as present, as being present. If you're really in the moment, you are open to responding unconditionally. And I think that's the bridge between the way we use it conventionally and what the practice is about. And there's no attachment when you're present and open. That's love. I think you could call that love. And there's no attachment. You're in the moment.
Interesting what can happen with it. Maybe you've experienced this, where you come into a room and feeling a little kerflucky. I don't know what the word would be. You know, a little kind of. And then you sit with people. It's happened with me tonight. No, then you sit. And you start to talk about love, or you just look out at everybody, and it's like everything just shifts. Everything shifts. Mark shifted coming in, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a shift in me coming in after a really challenging afternoon, and just a real shift, a complete letting go. And then it's like open, whatever happens is okay. You know? Maybe that's it. Whatever happens is okay. I don't know. You know, we talk about love usually conventionally. Someone used that word. conventional and in this practice, the mundane would be a word. Mundane sounds so mundane, doesn't it? And it's our life, you know? It just sounds so less than. But it's our life, so how can it be less than super mundane? You know, it's above, but it's not above. And I think that's the misunderstanding in words and in languages. We split things. This whole life that we live in is constantly splitting things to higher and lower, you know, mundane, supramundane. That's love. That's the unconditioned love. Yet, you know, it's not really a separate thing. It's really like this, really like this. This thing called life. We're swimming in it. We're stepping in it. We're walking in it. This is beautiful. Every step a prayer. The word prayer is another one. What comes up in you when you hear that word? You know, praying to God, which is a definite, like, can be for people. And the difference between, I was talking to somebody Saturday who has just received a cancer diagnosis. I shouldn't say that. She has just received, she has received a cancer diagnosis, just. And she said it was hard to sit there in silence. It was good for her, she said, but it was hard to sit there because, oh, the stories, what's going to happen? And what's just happened? And how could she work with it? How can she be with it? And I suggested she practice with metta, with loving kindness, that she go right there, may I be safe, you know, really to what's happening, right to love and be kind to herself, right there. May I be happy, which really means free. May I be healthy, and I really explained, it doesn't mean may I get rid of this cancer even, it really means that word that I mentioned last week, health, whole, health, heal, whole, holy, all the same, whole, may I be whole, may I live with ease of well-being. And she said that her acupuncturist had suggested that she say, I am safe, I am healthy, you know, in affirmations. And what did I think about that? And I said, go for it. Say it all the time. And also say, may I be safe. May I be happy. I said, it's the closest thing in Buddhism, to prayer that there is. Yet it's not praying to someone. It's just putting it out there. Just putting it out there. May I be safe. You know, it's a deep wish for love. Love, safety. Do you feel the difference in that? Yeah.
Well, I know as an ex-Catholic, as the work I've done in meditation, you know, but recognizing attachments. And I'm still deeply attached on a certain emotional level to the Catholic religion. So much so that the negative connotations are still there for me. Uh-huh. I was speaking to a coworker at work at the hospital, and she told me that her husband had recently been diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. I talked to her about it for a few minutes, and then I said, well, I don't pray, but it seemed so important to me to say, I do pray, because I don't believe in God. You know, this whole part of myself is still resentful or whatever. But I did say, I will send some love and kindness back to
Well, what
and
does that mean?
I said, make sure you take care of yourself while this is happening to us.
So what is metta for you?
Metta is what I... metta is something that I practice as much as possible, and when I'm at work, I actually try and work on Tom Len as well.
You want to explain that to people? They don't know?
The closest I come, perhaps, to love is when I do reach a point with a patient where I'm not looking at them as a diagnosis per se. It's just something that's happening. You know, it's an interaction between the two of us. In fact, if you're going to use the word God as a lightning rod, I actually had a patient ask me that once. Well, what's your conception of God? And I said, should I just nip this bud right here and tell this woman I'm an atheist? But I didn't. I said, well, I suspect that every time I go into a patient's room and relate to them, and the point where I actually essentially merge with the person, kind of where you realize that, you know, if you're doing something incredibly personal, like drawing blood from them or something like that, when you're actually merging with them, that point when you're not any different and you recognize that there's a difference. I'm not saying all healthcare workers do this, but when I am lucky enough to see where I'm merging and I'm no different from them, that's what I told her. I said, that's what God is to me. And she didn't know what to make of that. I don't know what God is. You know, whenever I talk to people about it, they're not, most of the people I work with are not Buddhists. So I actually had a coworker say, you know, I love you, and I said, oh, I don't know what that means. Thank you.
So inspired by just the vision of her over somebody who's suffering. And she responded that she said, well, God is compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, you can just, you don't have to put an unfavorable or unpleasant memory on it. Mm-hmm. Or God, in another book I'm reading now, it's called The Ten Challenges. And the first one is that still small voice within. It can be even thought of as Buddha nature.
Mm-hmm.
I asked Suhita Dharma. I said, he was a Trappist monk and now he's a Buddhist and he still considers himself a Trappist monk. Mm-hmm. I said, what is your notion of God? And he said, well, I think of God as mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you can broaden it. I mean, it's whatever it is and not be so offended or fearful of the concept, because most of the people I work with in the hospital have that notion of God.
Mm-hmm. Which notion?
Pardon?
Which notion?
I mean, they deal just with the notion of God.
Yeah.
So I can have my own notion, I don't have to have their notion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's Buddha nature? What's bodhicitta? Buddha heart. Bodhicitta. Buddha heart. Isn't that a beautiful word? Relative bodhicitta in action. What is this Buddha heart? Touch into that ever, that place of Buddha nature? You know, that's a Mahayana understanding. Yet, you know, this is all one Dharma now, in many ways.
ever touch into something that's very... I was with somebody yesterday in a mindfulness-based stress reduction class who had been meditating for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 5 weeks. And he touched a place of emptiness, a place of no self, no one home. And I tell you, it was a challenge talking to this group because nobody else was experiencing that, and these are very beginning meditators, and this guy saying, you know, I was really scared. So it's like, I needed to address it, and at the same time, I said, yeah, it can be scary to see, to be so mindful, to have mindfulness be so strong that everything's passing and then there's no observer, there's just it happening. He said, but here you are, right? He said, yeah. And I said, you're sitting here, right? Right. You can both count on the passing as the ground. The ground. That's something you can count on. You know, people often think of this of emptiness as being so nothing, as opposed to fleetingness. How about fleetingness, spaciousness, fleetingness? You can count on that. That's big news. That's really a gift. And this grief will pass. You can count on it. And you can feel it from moment to moment. I don't know about you, but I think a lot of you know how much I love summer. And yesterday I woke up and it ended. It was overcast and it was before it rained. And I just felt a lot of sadness. It was curious. You know, it's like sadness, sadness. And it was in this changing place, this transition place. And sometimes a friend of mine wrote a beautiful story about being on a one-month retreat by herself in her cabin, and how at night, at twilight, she always, she said, always feels this sadness. And people really resonated with this article. And it was what I was feeling yesterday, and I really recognized it. It's like, oh, it's changing here. It's changing, and I'm seeing it. And then it rained, and what do you know? It's fine. And I could feel it. You know, I went to see that movie, Milarepa. Milarepa. Yesterday, and I walked out of it. It's like, ooh, sadness here. Sadness here. By the time night came, it's like rain. It's like, oh. Rain, how cozy. But it's just these shifting conditions and this heart, mind, body reacting to it. Love. How about the ground of all being? Here's another one. Ground of all being. The four faces of love, the Brahma Viharas, really is what bodhicitta is, the Buddha heart. The heart breaks open and there's compassion. You know, you look at suffering and you can wall off, you can feel sympathy for, but that's definitely what you were talking, you know, what you weren't experiencing, but what a lot of people think of as, you know, compassion, where sympathy is really, it's your.
Well, I like when Pema Chodron writes about the heart breaking open. Mm-hmm. And that compassion. You have some choices as to what you can do. But if you're going to let go of the self and you break the heart open, there's something there that's, that I think comes very close to the compassion and metta in an all consuming.
And in each one of the Brahma Viharas, is are the others. Each one has all of the Brahma, Vihara, Viharas on in it. Each one. And within metta, there's joy. There's compassion. There's sitting with the way things are. There's deep wisdom in all of those. Looking at, Kevin just watched me, so I'm being aware of that. Looking at faith, that word, which is another one. Sharon Salzberg wrote a beautiful book called Faith that looks at faith as being different than belief, which is based on what's taught, I'd say. Faith being an inner trusting of our own experience, of the wisdom that comes from seeing mindfully into reality. You can have faith. You can actually experience very deeply and be unshakable in faith. And it's not that you believe everything because someone told you. It's because you're experiencing the truth of the way things are, the cause of suffering, and the way out. Right here, right now. Not in some supra mundane place, right here, right now. It's all here, right now. All here, right now. Dharma, love, God, Buddha nature have different feelings. I was taught in Catholic school that God always was, always will be, and always remains the same. And the unconditioned, unconditional love, always was. So just looking at how our views and opinions hold us away from the heart. I think I'll end with a poem. If I can find one. No, I won't. I'll end with. The teachings of the Buddha. Look how he abused me and beat me. How he threw me down and robbed me. Live with such thoughts and you live in hate. Look how he abused me and beat me. How he threw me down and robbed me. Abandon such thoughts and live in love. In this world, hate never yet dispelled hate. Only love dispels hate. This is the law, ancient and inexhaustible. You too shall pass away. Knowing this, how can you quarrel? So let's sit together. Just let the heart open, the belly be soft, and the breath come and go. Experiencing the connection with like-minded people, trying to wake up, waking up. Compassion is a verb. May we go our separate ways, remembering each other. Our community, may we find peace in our hearts. May we be peace in the world. May the world remember peace. maybe merit from our practice together tonight. Aid all beings. May all beings wake up.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.